You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thursday morning edition of Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm on Twitter, at Sam Ekstrom. That's my name. My guest today is Luke Inman, and he's on Twitter, at Luke underscore Spinman. Hey, Luke, how about some breaking news right out of the chute? Case Keenum has been named the NFC Offensive Player of the Month. Reading from the release, Keenum finished the month 69 of 97, 71.1%, 866 yards, 7 touchdowns, 2 picks, passer rating of 114. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and guess what, Sam? He might not start next week, apparently. Only in Minnesota, you rip off 7 straight wins, and you're still, you know, kind of in flux with that quarterback position. Clearly, as we've been on this winning streak, the Vikings, that has been the number one focal point in between the games, has been who's going to start at quarterback. Case Keenum, man, you know, I watch the film every week, multiple times throughout the week, try to break that all 22 down. This guy's just playing with magic right now, and he's playing within the confines of not only Pat Shurmur's system, who's calling a great game and has a great game plan week in and week out, but he's playing in the confines of the system that Zimmer built when he got here, and that's let your defense do most of the dirty work, just make sure you don't turn the ball over. And Keenum's added a little bit of flair. He's definitely been the catalyst of, again, you know, kind of creating some big plays this offense has not seen in a long time.
You published your film review notes at zonecoverage.com yesterday. And Luke, we've always known you to be an eloquent guy who could turn a phrase, but I think you might have had your finest sentence yet describing Case Keenum's pass to Kyle Rudolph on Thanksgiving. Here's how it reads. Keenum stands tall in the pocket and delivers a butterfly with sore feet that just crashes down into Rudolph's hands like a baby in a pillow. I mean,
not bad. Not bad. Who's that? James Joyce?
Yeah, it's the Dubliners. Oh my goodness, that was unbelievable.
I appreciate the call. I'm pretty vanilla when it comes to getting my thoughts on paper. But once in a while, I'll surprise you, right, with a little wild card like that.
Right. It's as surprising, frankly, as the throw itself, because the throw was unreal. And
it was
just like you describe, a butterfly with sore feet. Keenum's not really one to laser anything, but he does have a nice touch that he's exhibited a few times this year. And that pass to Rudolph was definitely one of them. You know, Keenum makes some risky throws, but more often than not, he's putting them right where they need to be.
Sam, for me, it's the throw of the year so far. Last year, Sam Bradford, week 2, the bank opening week, Sunday night football against the Packers, Sam Bradford stood in tall in the pocket about the 50-yard line and threw an absolute dart over 2 defenders to Stephon Diggs, who made a hell of a catch as well. I think Case Keenum, what he did last week, seeing that free blitzer come down, that crashing blitzer come down, knew he was just going to get, taken a lick. And, to stand tall in the pocket, just it speaks volumes, Sam, because I'm telling you, we take that for granted. A lot of people just watch on Sundays. And, you know, for Vikings fans specifically, it's been a long time. I mean, I'm telling you, like guys like Christian Ponder couldn't do that. You know, it's a small, subtle thing in football, being a quarterback, but it also means a lot. And I'm telling you, your teammates, when they go back and watch this film with you throughout the week, they'll definitely give you a few pats on the back, and they want to go to battle with you. And I think, lastly, about that throw specifically, not only was he going to take a big hit, he stood in tall in the pocket and threw a strike, but you watch Kyle Rudolph's view of that, and he literally just had to turn around, and that ball fell right in his lap. What a throw. Case Keenum, again, I don't think anybody ever saw this. I think he's playing with some serious magic right now.
Yep, one of the best stretches we've seen here in a while. Going down your film notes here, you talk about the running game, and in particular that 75-yard, 4-play drive to start the second half. And I've got a little nugget for you here. I'm doing some research for an article. I did a deep dive yesterday, and I came across a couple stats, that might surprise you and the rest of the listeners. So we've known that the Vikings last year had an issue with negative runs, right? And,
big time.
And they went into this year saying, we're going to eliminate those negative runs. Would it surprise you to know that the Vikings are actually one of the worst negative run teams in the NFL this year, that they have actually matched last year's negative run total through 11 games? The difference is explosive runs. They are on pace to double last year's output in runs of 10 yards or more. That's the key. And that big Latavius Murray run against Detroit is evidence of that, that this offensive line is creating holes wide enough to get guys into that second level.
Yeah, I mean, Sam, it's one of these situations and equations that there's a lot of different variables going on. You know, I mentioned it's been a long time since Vikings fans have had a quarterback that can make those kind of throws that Keenum's throwing right now. It's been a long time since the Vikings have played with a lead, you know, into the second half, into the late in the third quarter, early fourth quarter, and had to try to run out the clock, so to speak. They haven't been in that position a lot, or if ever, under this Zimmer era. A lot of times they're playing from behind, or they're playing low-scoring games, tied up within 3 points, 4 points. Now this year, especially the last few weeks, Washington, Detroit this past Thanksgiving, they're playing with not only leads, but sizable leads. And they've never done that before. And I think it's been a learning experience. And I think that's when you're starting to see a lot of those negative losses in the running game is, again, when they're trying to run out the clock a little bit. And, you know, going to the big plays, you mentioned the Latavius Murray big run. I think it was a two-year plan last year. We all knew that, man, this offensive line needs a complete overhaul, but it's going to take 2 years. They've done a great job in year one, bringing in two great free agents who have far exceeded any expectations in Riley Reiff and Mike Remmers, and then, of course, Pat Elflein as well. But, you know, if you can add one more guy early in the draft next year on the interior, the offensive guard, this offensive line could be even better. And I think, again, having that running game this year is just something that we're not used to seeing. And I mentioned a lot of different equations. It's not just the offensive line. How about upgrading just a Matt Asiata to a Latavius Murray? What a huge difference that's made so far.
Yeah, massive. And even though Murray doesn't exactly have breakaway speed, it's still greater than Matt Asiata's speed. It didn't take a lot to upgrade that area. And what's interesting, too, you mentioned bringing in a guard. Pro Football Focus, if you subscribe to that, they really don't like the Vikings' interior linemen. Even though they're playing so well as a unit, Nick Easton's one of the more poorly graded guards in the league, and I don't really buy in necessarily to a lot of that, because offensive line is so cohesive, and you play as a unit, you're not playing as individuals, and they don't like Pat Elflein either for some reason. But you know what? There's so much that happens before the snap with communication and diagnosis, and that's not something that PFF can grade. And I feel like this line in particular is very talkative. They communicate well, and they help Keenum out figuring out what the defense is going to be showing.
Yeah, no doubt, Sam. You're completely right. I think it starts with Pat Elflein, too. I mean, for what he's done as a rookie at the hardest position on the offensive line, we often talk about the left tackle against some of these elite pass rushers, but I'm telling you, man, to play center the way he's playing as a rookie, I don't care what PFF says. And, you know, going back to some of those offensive line grades just real quickly, you know, guys like Easton, they struggled a lot in that first month. Remember, we were 2-2. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were sitting at 500 after 4 weeks saying, who are we? That Steeler game, Nick Easton was really bad. I mean, he got eaten up by Casey Hayward and some other guys. Some of those may bring some of those grades down, but all in all, Sam, we had the worst offensive line last year in the league thanks to a plethora of injuries. This year, I just wanted middle of the pack. I said if they can be 16th or better, that's going to be such a big improvement from last year, and it's going to help a lot. But they're actually exceeding those expectations. They're top 10 in a lot of categories, top 5 in some categories as well. I think all in all, what they've done in just 1 year has far exceeded anybody's expectations. And you're seeing such a balanced team now on the offensive side of the ball and on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I think they're 8th in points scored, and I think they're – can't remember what they are in points allowed. It's top 5. I think it's
top 5. We were talking about last night on the Football Machine, Andy Luke and Reeve Football Machine, checking out on zonecoverage.com. We recorded last night that the Vikings – are one of the few teams left that have such a balanced team on offense and defense, meaning they at one point last week, just last week, were top five in both offense and defense, depending on what category you're looking at. The Rams had the same situation coming into Minnesota. We whooped up on them, shut them down for 59 minutes, took care of business. The other team in the league right now that is top five in both offense and defense, again, depending on what specific category you're looking at, is the Eagles. So I keep kind of foreshadowing when I'm breaking down some of the film and watching some other film throughout the league that, you know, what if we end up playing the Eagles at some point in the playoffs? How do we match up against them? And, I know I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but after that Rams game, seeing how balanced this team is, I think we got a pretty good shot to beat anybody.
Yep, and just looking at those defensive numbers, Minnesota fifth, Philadelphia third in points allowed this year, and they're just 4 points separating them, 195 and 191. So they're
tight.
Yeah,
I'll say this just real quick, Sam, that Philly, really, if you look at their schedule, hasn't played a ton of tough teams. And you can kind of make the same argument with the Vikes, but lately, though, again, coming out of a bye, at Washington's no picnic, and then obviously the Rams at home. Detroit always gives you fits, came down to the wire. But they're winning these close games now this year, Sam, and that's the difference from last year to this year.
Right, and really quickly, too, on Philly, I had someone reach out to me on Twitter and ask me about this. If Philadelphia loses a game here, whether it's to the Rams or whether it's to the Seahawks, and the Vikings are in a tie with them, there's a very good chance that strength of victory could be the deciding tiebreaker between those two teams, and Minnesota would likely win that tiebreaker because of that weak strength of schedule. So keep an eye on that as we go forward. We're talking to Luke Inman at Luke_Spinman on Twitter. Sunday's game, Vikings at Falcons, the two best third down conversion teams in the league, and not only is Minnesota great offensively on third down, but they're pretty good defensively. Over the last three games since the bye, they are converting over 53% on third down, and they are 83% in the red zone, 10 out of 12 since the bye. I mean, when you talk about self-scouting during the bye and then coming out and actually making tangible improvements, look at that. Red zone success is off the charts, number one in the league over that span, and the third down percentage is off the charts as well, just behind Atlanta. Great work by Pat Shurmur, honestly. What do you think is behind that?
Yeah, Shurmur's playing out of his mind right now. He's calling games out of his mind. He's using his personnel. He's maximizing, and this is what good coaches do. They maximize the skill set around you and trying to form everybody to your scheme. Listen, when you look at Shurmur and his career, I'll be the first to tell you, last year, I think I wanted the guy fired. He was so bad with, you know, third and eight, third and 12. Let's throw another two-yard dump off. I mean, it was very frustrating. But then now this year, you realize how bad, again, that offensive line was. They couldn't do anything last year. Literally the worst offensive line in the league, thanks to injuries. He couldn't do anything. He couldn't open up his playbook at all. And you start to see that this year when you get a little bit of star power, you get a little bit of movement up front and play with some physicality. Pat Shurmur right now, again, when you look at his history, I think there's a lot of proof in the last 10 years or so in the NFL why Shurmur is so good. And I think he goes in spurts. You know, he played with Sam Bradford and turned him into a rookie of the year when he was the first pick overall, had some great seasons in Philadelphia. Hell, he was hired to be a head coach for the Cleveland Browns no more, you know, 5-6 years ago. So clearly he's good at what he does. But this year, again, he's put it all together. And, you know, Sam, you're at Winter Park a lot. I know you've probably heard this. Maybe I'd like to get your opinion. Just how much do you think the Vikings did learn? Everybody, head coach, Shurmur, coordinators, players, from last season's kind of collapse after the 5-0 start? Because we've heard that a lot over the past few weeks, haven't we?
Yeah, we have a lot. And you hear it from a lot of the players in the locker room, whether it's Anthony Barr or Terrence Newman, guys who went through it last year. They talk about how this has mentally sharpened them. I know we were talking to Laquan Treadwell a few weeks ago, and he said, yeah, last year during the bye week, everybody took off. They were partying. I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, yeah, we kind of got away, and we kind of relaxed over the bye week, and we came back thinking we were the best, and we really got humbled. This year, he said, a lot of people stuck around the facility, and I think that's sort of a microcosm of the team's mentality that they know how fast everything can collapse. Terrence Newman was telling us the other day that nothing matters right now. It only matters where you are at the end of the regular season. And someone asked him, and they said, do you want to be playing your best football coming up in December? And he said, no, we don't. We want to play our best football in January and February. So they've got their eyes on a greater prize this year, which I think probably comes from the bitterness of last year and the collapse and going from top to bottom and the 3-8 finish. That's all got to play into the psyche of this team. And as painful as it was to watch as a fan, I'm sure people can appreciate now how hungry this team is.
Oh, no doubt, Sam. And I think, too, I mean, again, you look at Atlanta 2 years ago, they were 5-0. They had a huge collapse. The next year, last year, they go to the Super Bowl. Not saying that's going to happen with the Vikings, but clearly something there is linked as far as being able to start that hot. And then, again, learning from your mistakes as you go. Again, I think the offensive line was so bad last year that as they were continuing to sharpen their tools defensively, another year under Zimmer, really turn into a cohesive unit on that defensive side of the ball. And then, again, you see Pat Shurmur just clawing and scratching for any type of production with no offensive line. Then you get this team a brand-new Christmas present this offseason and turn that worst offensive line into a top-10 unit. And now everything's starting to unfold and things are becoming a lot more easier. But I agree with you. I think that these players have the right mentality to just take this one game at a time. And that's what you need to do. That's what the good teams do, don't they?
No doubt. That's what New England does. Bill Parcells did that. And that's kind of Mike Zimmer's mentor. We got an injury report here to touch on. Both teams have one key player who didn't practice yesterday. Desmond Trufant, cornerback for the Falcons. And the Vikings' Eric Kendricks missed yesterday's practice with a hip injury. How do you think those two injuries could impact the game?
Well, I'll tell you what. Trufant is much love as Xavier Rhodes and everybody's got over the past few years. Trufant, the first 2 years, Trufant was considered better than Xavier Rhodes. Just to put things into perspective, they came out in the same exact draft. They were drafted within about five picks of each other in those late teen, early 20s of the 2013 draft, and he's been outstanding. I mean, I cannot tell you how important it is for a defensive coordinator to be able to shut down one side of the field. He's that good. Now, luckily, the Vikings have two equal threats in the passing game. So if you want to shut down Diggs, you got Thielen. If you want to shut down Thielen, you got Diggs. Kendricks on the other side of the ball, that worries me a little bit. Not even so much for this game specifically. I think you can maybe squeeze by one game with some depth and a Emmanuel Lemur, if it were to be, a Ben Gideon, the rookie from Michigan, Kentrell Brothers. But long distance, I'm looking at the long stretch here, hips, I don't know how serious that is. I mean, that could just be a Bill Belichick, let's just put something on the injury report type thing. But if it's a serious injury with your hip, the short area quickness that Kendricks moves with that makes him so great sideline to sideline, that explosion's not going to be there anymore. And I really worry about his production down the stretch. You know, there's usually a few guys, big names, that start to wear down towards the end of the year. I just hope that's not Kendricks this time around.
Maybe you can recall if Kendricks or Barr have missed any reps this year. I know they've started every game. What would the nickel look like without Kendricks? Would it be Lemur, do you think?
I think it would be Lemur, which surprised me a little because in training camp, I remember seeing them flirt around with Ben Gideon actually at nickel, which surprised us because he's more of a downhill linebacker, which helps support the run, not necessarily great in pass coverage. But when they have gone to the nickel or even towards the end of the preseason quite a bit, their second team guy is always Emmanuel Lemur, which again, I think surprised some people. So he knows Zim's system. We've seen it with Andrew Sendejo. He will take the, you know, maybe shorter ceiling, if you will, but a higher floor with his players defensively, just to make sure he knows everybody's on the same page. That's just the Zimmer philosophy. So I would guess he'd go with a veteran like Emmanuel Lemur. Again, you could see a little sprinkle of Kentrell Brothers and Ben Gideon in there too.
His name's Luke Inman, covers the Vikings, covers the draft primarily at zonecoverage.com. He's on Twitter at Luke_Spinman. You're going to be booting up the Draft Wrap podcast. I'll probably be working with you on that here for the coming months leading up to the draft. Do you have your big boards already constructed? Are you grinding on that college film?
Yeah, we're starting to grind away already. You know, it's fun. It's still early, but there's still a lot of tape right now. If you look at it, it's basically, what, December, first week of December. You got about another month of college football. So you're kind of at that point where it's like, you know, you don't want to hit January and have to start from the beginning. So it's crucial to continue to keep up with a lot of these draft prospects. And what makes it tough, this part, Sam, is that you can really only start watching film and breaking down guys of seniors, because you just don't know what juniors are going to end up declaring. But plenty to go around for sure. I can't wait to get the draft wrap up and going. We had a early kind of preview episode with Evan Silva, a huge fantasy football nut from Roto World. He was awesome. But we got some great guests lined up this season, not only some players, but some really top-end kind of draft analysis guys like Dane Brugler from CBS. So, yeah, man, I can't wait to get it going, and hopefully you'll be around there with me too.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be awesome. Can't wait to talk to you from the Senior Bowl as well. That's going to be great too. He's Luke Inman. My name's Sam Ekstrom. This is Locked On Vikings Thursday edition, 321st episode, and we'll have Sage Rosenfels back on the show tomorrow to make our predictions for Vikings-Falcons. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.